I'm Jamie Gennaro, and this is Business for Humans. Let's talk about taking your business to a new level without the suits and without being a robot. Here, you can be yourself, you can be imperfect, you can be flawed, and you can still have raging success. So let's go.
This is Find Your Magic, where we interview people who have found their gifts and the courage to live into them. I'm Tracy Feldstein, wellness engineer and body engineer and owner of Hello Mellow Natural Skincare.
And I'm Jamie Gennaro, consultant and business coach. And this week, we interview Rafan Keb, who's the owner of Space and Flow, located in London. He's a somatic movement teacher, trainer, and a poet. To find out more about him, click the link below.
Enjoy. And if you enjoy this, make sure you subscribe and like on our channel and share it with your friends. And if you want to see us in person, come to our retreat in January, the 8th of 2022 in Ojai, California.
Enjoy the interview. Well, hello. Thank you again for joining me for this talk about turning on your magic. So, Rafan, just to talk about how I came in contact with you. So, I went to a yoga retreat years ago. I think it was like 2018 in France, in Valmy. And I don't speak French, but my best friend lives there. And so I had this amazing, beautiful weekend, all in French. And then you came in speaking French, but also speaking bits of English. So I felt like I could follow your class a little bit more. But your approach and your style to yoga just to me felt like a breath of fresh air. You brought music into it. There was this different type of movement. And for me, I kind of felt like, oh, I found it. Like, this is my place. This is where I belong. And I hadn't really felt that way with yoga before. So that's how I came in contact with you. I was really inspired by your class. And I've talked about your class multiple times with the other people that I went to the event with. And so they all say hello. They were all equally inspired. But I think what I would like to understand about your background is, you know, how did you discover yoga? And then how did you decide to kind of make the leap into turning it into a career and sort of a lifelong following?
I see. Well, first of all, thank you, Jamie, for having me on. It's a pleasure seeing you again. And thank you for the kind words. I'm really glad the practice resonated with you. In relation to how I found yoga, like many of us, by necessity, My back went, I was a musician going through my music degree at the time, and my back went. So there you go, finding yourself. I found myself seeing chiropractors and osteopath and you name it. And that was 15, 16 years ago. And I found myself doing Pilates and eventually yoga pretty much every day in order to sustain myself, at least physically. And shortly became a teacher. The switch from playing music to becoming a full-time teacher was actually fairly easy in the sense that back in those days, teaching yoga paid more and more frequently than being a funk or reggae musician. So I had to make a decision, don't get me wrong. It was a case of if I take on those classes and I know and understand that consistency is key in building anything, I had this understanding somehow that I couldn't take on a class and say I was going to be there every Thursday, Friday or Saturday morning. And then at the same time, say yes to being in different bands or doing session work that were going to call me up, you know, once in a while or every 2 or 3 weeks. And as such, having to get my classes covered, you know, that there would be something to be sacrificed there. So within 2 or 3 years, I decided to focus on teaching and prioritize that. And yeah, it's been 15 years now.
Wow. So what was that like? Because it's interesting because music is one of those things too, where you have to feel like you've found this gift and have the courage to do it and to mm-hmm. also sacrifice the other things and the other jobs and the sort of stability. And so it's interesting to go from something that probably felt like you had found your gift and you were using your gift to mm-hmm. leave that and go into yoga. Was there fear that music wouldn't be there for you anymore?
Well, I mean, I think I left out a very important chapter, which was that when I say necessity, what I mean by that is, to make a long story short, is that I, in my life, only had one dream, which was to become a touring musician. I only wanted to travel the world and be on different stages and everything else. I didn't have plan B. And second year of my degree, my back went. But with that, my dream went. And you understand? So it was the year where my son was born as well, who's now 17. And I went from having this one goal to now having a family and having this option of expressing myself the way I used to, towards the goal that I had been taken away from me, or at least that's how it felt. So when I say necessity, it was a case of, okay, I what do I do with myself now? Mm. You know, how do I reinvent myself? Where do I go? Teaching is always something that's been on my mind, because I've always shared anything I would go and learn and seek out about in my life. But it just so happened that yoga kind of felt right at the time, and it was one of many, many options, because my mind went all over the place. And also, I benefited from yoga not being what it is now, meaning that I could make up my mind about the practice and the teaching of it without being influenced by social media, people, or anything else.
Right.
So that is how the leap happened, i.e. Yeah. having to quite literally having to reinvent myself.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. And so when you reflect on that now, do you feel... what are your feelings? Does it feel like now you're on this path and that this was a path that you feel was meant for you? Do you know what I'm saying? Like what are your reflections on where you've been now for the last 15 years?
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting, because I am now training as a psychotherapist, and I'm now again in the process of reinventing myself somehow. You know, using the skills and the experience that I've had over the past 15, 20 years. But how, when I reflect, to answer your question more directly, there's a combination of pain and gratefulness, right? Gratefulness in hindsight is 2020, and it's great that those things did happen to me. But I also would not really wish them on my worst enemy.
Yeah,
because it is a year of my life that I can't really remember. It was for close to 9-10 months where I couldn't play. I was in pain every day. My mind, you know, was in different places. And it's not something I would want to relive again, nor to give to anyone else to live on. But like anything, you know, the greatest challenges tend to be the greatest lessons as well. So it taught me a few things, and when I reflect back, it was a case of learning how not to put every single one of my eggs in one basket, learning to diversify, learning to be open-minded, developing more of a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset, saying this is the one and only thing that can give me happiness. Having a definition for myself of what happiness can mean, because I didn't have one. So those things in reflection I can speak of. Necessity and injuries and having to is both the gift and the curse. Many of us actually fight that place where, if we use what happened to us for which we are unhappy about, we may actually turn around and start being happy about it. I don't want to be grateful for what happened to me, so I'm not going to use that as a path, as a launching pad towards a better me. I think there's something unconscious that happens with a lot of us. I can speak for myself and say that I've held on to that for a while.
Yeah, it's so true. I think a lot about, I've had grief, a lot of grief in my life, a lot of loss. And when I think mm-hmm. about grief, it's also one of those things that it's easy to just hold on to and not use it as a launching pad also.
Yeah.
But when I think about being in the depths of grief, it's one of the most productive emotions. You know, mm-hmm. it's an emotion that I don't wish on anyone, but when you have to face it, it's busy. it really works at you, and you don't want it. I feel like most people in their whole life avoid having to feel that feeling in particular, mm-hmm. that we do everything we can to avoid it. But once you're in it, it's just so productive. It really is. Like, that's the only word I can use to describe grief, because
yeah.
it makes us work, but it's productive work. It feels useful.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, interesting. So now, in this place that where you have some gratefulness towards your experiences, how are you using that to teach people in a different way? What are the lessons that you're bringing to people? How are you fueling your teaching from that place?
That's a good question. Quite a few ways, but I'm thinking of one in particular, which is in relation to vocabulary. And what I mean by that is that in order to reinvent yourself or to change or I should say augment your story, you have got to improve on the vocabulary that you use in order to tell your story. So I am a fan of saying and of teaching and of sharing with whoever wants to listen to me that wanting to change your story is the beginning. But developing the vocabulary to tell this new story or this old story differently is where it's at. Number two, in terms of what I was thinking in relation to your question, which was to have mentors, either direct or indirect mentors, people to look up to, goals to have, you know, places that you want to reach, and that you can then really and honestly look at your goals and say, how do I get there? And then act in congruence with that. Either the feedback is direct, if you're lucky enough to have teachers, mentors, coaches, therapists who can tell you, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm hearing, and or finding ways for yourself to record yourself, to pay attention to how people react to what you say and what you do when you do and say those things that you do, and to be as blunt and honest with yourself about, I am trying to cultivate this, but what I do and say cultivates that. Mm-hmm. And if the issue is always appearing when I'm doing this, then perhaps I should take responsibility. Perhaps it is not in the people in front of me not getting me. It is me not expressing myself the way I really ought to in order to contribute to the situation or to cultivate what I really want to cultivate. And it's not an easy task, right? I know for myself that I remember a book by Dale Carnegie, you know, the book, How to Win and Friends and Influence People. Mm-hmm. And I really disliked this book. I really disliked it because I'm French. I'm from Paris in particular. We like confrontation. It's like I'm wired for this. And this book is telling me basically to give people compliments before I tell them what to change and then give them another compliment. You know, that little shit sandwich.
The sandwich, yeah.
Yeah. And I really, really disliked it. I want people to be adults. I don't want to be in my head. That was the argument. And then I went to work with children and I somehow consciously and unconsciously started to put the theory to practice. And I could see that people were responding differently to me.
Mm-hmm.
And up to now, I still don't like this book. But it is like a Bible because it does work. And again, people don't hear negation. And I was very, very quick to point out where people were messing up to my students, where they were, see if I can swear, fucking up. And to change that, find the good, find the positive, you know, impress the fact that the effort needs to be acknowledged first. Yeah. As opposed to just go, you got this one wrong. That's not what I meant. And that changes everything. Again, it goes with the vocabulary, but at least in my mind, I understood that to be useful and effective, I needed to curve my want and need to be concise, because I love to be concise and to go straight to the point. And I love when people give it to me straight. But also it is the way I am wired. My culture, my background and conditioning kind of forced that onto me. I am grateful for. But I live in the UK. It's a different culture altogether.
Yeah.
And we got to do what works in order to get to where we want to be.
Right.
And that is exactly the walk. That's part of the walk. Mentors, feedback somehow.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Coaches and everything are very useful for that.
Yeah.
You know, if people can afford it, get yourself a coach so you can, you know, take, you can receive accountability from and some
exactly.
feedback.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've had to work on the opposite thing in my work, because I came from this very hard, very ego-driven world, the world of advertising. And I was a woman in that world, which was also, you know, a different sort of place to be. And so I leaned really hard into my nurturing, encouraging all the things that that world did not provide. I wanted to give that to my people, to my teams, and be that encouraging voice. And then I moved to the Netherlands, which is like direct and straight and to the point. And I worked for a Dutch company right when I landed there. And it was a blow. It was a major blow. But it also, in the same way that you learned that culture from a different perspective, I had to learn how to be more concise, how to be more direct, how to make sure that I was incorporating that level of feedback to my clients as a coach, because I couldn't only encourage and pat them on the back. I needed to be a reflection to them of the things that other people weren't saying in a kind way, in my own, you know, natural way. But it's interesting because I had the complete opposite reflection of, like, I had to really learn that direct, concise communication to be effective in my work. So it's a balance. It's a
beautiful
balance.
Challenge. Yeah. Here, I think both of us developed what I call the range. And first of all, I'll tell you that I train teachers, mostly women, mostly female teachers. And interestingly enough, I teach that most of them need to, in my eyes, I basically coach them in not being mommy anymore. So it's a very female trait to start with. But the range that I'm referring to is also appreciating that there is that tough, direct, concise, and there's the nurturing aspect. One could say male to female ratio, which I quite like the symbolism of that. And it's not about staying in on one side of the range. It's really about developing that entirety, that that spectrum of expression that you can have, so that even when you're nurturing, there is something inside of you that makes people feel and understand that you could easily slide to the other side. And whilst you're being tough and concise and direct, there's also something within you that makes people feel and sense and understand that there's a nurturing side to you. And I think that the better you develop that range, like an actor who's capable of going dramatic and comedic to soft and gentle, or, you know what I mean, to just have that range. And the more as people, as coaches, as teachers and trainers, but especially as people, I would say, developing that range and finding comfort in as much of that spectrum as we can for ourselves and for others is the best thing you can do, so that we can travel, you know, from one city to another, from one country to another, from one person to another, from a client to another, and somehow gauge where you need to be on that range, on that spectrum, for them to benefit from your presence to the maximum.
100%. Oh, I love that. 100%. Definitely. Because I think, again, like, my environment was what pushed me to lean in one direction. And now when I'm working with individuals, I can find the balance between that range, but I had to lean so hard on one side because what I saw around me was not that. And I knew that's what people needed. And I think that my instinct was right. I mean, I think people gravitated towards working with me because I wasn't the normal kind of manager, or, you know, I was running a business. I ran an office in Amsterdam for an American company. And I think people there were like, oh, this is a boss that isn't like the normal boss that we would have in this industry and in this environment, because I leaned really hard in that direction. But again, just being in the Netherlands, I had to learn to find that other place. Yeah. But I like the idea of just finding an individual and understanding where on the spectrum they need you to show up for them. That's a really beautiful kind of metaphor for that. Mm-hmm. Because it's true. Everyone needs something different and we're trying to provide that for them. And it reminds me of something that, I don't know if you've read Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, mm-hmm. but she talks about people being her believing mirrors.
I see.
That she needs some people to provide really, you know, very strict, helpful feedback, but also you need people to encourage your art and to encourage your work and to be those people who will believe in you no matter what.
Sure.
And so I'm curious, who are your believing mirrors? Do you have people like that in your life that help you believe in yourself and believe that you're capable of doing the next augmentation and the next mm-hmm. reinvention?
Yeah, well, I do. I'm lucky enough. The first person that comes to mind is my wife, simply because today is our 20th anniversary.
Oh.
She's in Turkey this morning for 10 days walking over there. But, you know, we were WhatsApping, chatting about that this morning, just going 20 years of wow. putting up with each other, but also supporting one another and being there when, you know, the going gets rough. But also providing feedback and intelligent, you know, full of love and compassion and belief in each other's potential. So that's the type of feedback we've been providing. Besides that, I'm lucky enough to have a mom who loves me very much. People around me who don't necessarily say it all the time, but seem to be sticking around me as if they've got a lot of faith in my potential and in my being. So that provides, as always, provided me with quite a bit of faith. There's a side of me that's quite, I'm going to say French, pretentious and egotistical, which I now value a lot. I am also someone I shall rely on for my own belief in oneself. I'm thinking now about a speech by Matthew McConaughey, who's talking about his future self as being the person that he looks up to or that he listens to. And I'm starting to appreciate that concept a lot more. And the sources of inspiration, the people that I look up to, you know, on my wall, I've got John Coltrane here and Nina Simone and Miles Davis. I like jazz and jazz musicians in particular, for their commitment and their sense of artistry and their dedication to their art form. And that really inspires me. I imagine John Coltrane to be of a certain way from what I read from and of him, from the people about. And I sometimes ask myself, like, how would he react to me if we were sitting in the same room right now on my sofa? What type of reaction would I get from this guy? I want to build myself to a place where someone like John Coltrane would listen to me, speak about my own art form and be able to say, yes, young brother, I understand where you are. I see and sense where you're off to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Total projections. We need a bit of madness in order to get, you know, to our dreams. But from time to time, I use that. You know, if mm-hmm. I don't have an older mentor or coach or someone that I look up to and I can ask questions, it's a case of asking myself that imaginary friend or mentor, people that you respect from afar, would they respect you?
Yeah.
And if you don't feel they would respect you, then start walking towards building the capacity and the skills and the abilities to become someone that they would actually respect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. That's a great way to reflect on that. So last question for you. When you go into this next phase, what are you most afraid of? What do you feel like you're holding back? What's that piece of you that you feel like, okay, I have this like genius thing, but I'm mm-hmm. afraid to put it out into the world. I don't know how people will react to it. Like, what's the most fearful thing that you're holding back right now?
Oh, Jamie, you don't know what this question means, because only yesterday I've decided to publish a book of poetry I've been writing for the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And I'm really now facing that question as to not only what has been holding me, but what is holding me now. So it's very, very fresh and very, very raw where you're pressing on right now. And I can honestly say from the height of today, in terms of having a couple of hours of reflection, because I've been thinking about that, there's quite a bit of fear of success, which is kind of an odd one, right? And I benefit from not really fearing judgment that much, but fear of success is one. Fear of not being able to live up to my own potential, because once you put something out there, you have to follow it up with something else, I believe, or at least I feel, I sense. And that scares me a bit, because if I've been writing something for 15 years, you know, and if somebody likes it and said, you know, we want you to do another one, I'm not going to have another 15 years. Am I actually good enough to write another one? You know, so I'm projecting future pacing way too much. So those are two of the main obstacles that I'm now facing, really. I'm sure there's more, but those are the two that jumps at me in terms of the challenge that I'm facing internally as to, you know, publishing something fairly intimate. That is me, that can be rated and liked and disliked and all those things that I feel is genius, to use your words, because in relation to everything that I've already built around it. To make a long story short, I use this poetry to write a script for a short film. I've turned it into a play at some point that's never got produced, but we started to work on it a few years ago with actors. I've had quite a few ideas as to what to do with those writings. And I'm now like, just keep it simple, silly. They're poems. You don't have to write a song with them, because that's my wiring. Just like, I've written a poem. Now let me turn this into a song. So that means let me produce the music. Let me produce the video clip that goes with it. Let me look out for all the musicians that I could gather. And let me look for the right location to film it. And before you know it, I haven't done any of those things, because then it became a massive undertaking where the simple idea was you've written a bunch of poems that you think ought to be read. Print them out. Put it out. So that's number three, I guess, number one of what I'm working with, which is keep it simple, silly. You know, the KISS principle.
Yeah, amazing. And so just out of curiosity, what does your future self have to say about where you are right now? What would your future self tell you?
Oh, I honestly don't really know. I could make something up. I could have a chat of many things. But it's true that that practice of looking ahead and what would you want your you know, older self to say to you right now? I think my older self would tell me what he's been telling me for a while, which is get on with it.
Yeah.
Start.
Yeah. Exactly. Rafan, thank you so much. It's been so great to reconnect with you.
My deepest pleasure.
It's amazing. Yeah. And we'll stay in touch. I'll let you know about the California event. Maybe we'll get you out there to teach. That would be beautiful. I like the sound of that. Yeah, cool. Put January on your calendar, California. January in California.
My birthday is in January, weather. So I may come in and celebrate my birthday with you guys on the 20th. If you are still looking at
amazing. Okay, great. Awesome. Great. Well, thanks again. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk soon.
With Rafan too, it's clear that he's on a new path now. Right? He's done something and done it successfully and sort of brought it to this place where now he's teaching other people how to do his work, which I feel like is that next level up of like, I want this work to stay going into the world. So I'm going to train people to do it. But now I'm on this new path. And that is what's really interesting to me. It's like, okay, now what happens? And so by doing this commentary, we're kind of like, you know, it's not that we're trying to talk about people behind their backs, but we're trying to crack open as coaches, like people's stories, because we all have stories and they're not all true. They're just stories we've been saying for a long time. So I think it's interesting to show people that you can look at these stories also from an external perspective to see where that fear is sitting inside of the story. So yeah, that's what we want to get to, because that's where the magic is. The magic is with the fear.
Totally. And the old stories, right? And uncovering them and cracking them open and looking at them, because it's so funny. It's probably the same story that was at the other, right, where you're talking about where you were successful. You probably had the same stories at the beginning there that you're now having again. So they just keep reappearing when we stretch ourselves. And I think it's so fun to talk to these people that have stretched themselves, and you can see how they just keep stretching themselves, right? And it's like, it's so funny, the first stretch might be like so uncomfortable, but then it's just like all the other things in coaching where it's like there's a familiar uncomfortable feeling that then flips when you really look at it, and it becomes it's too uncomfortable to have that feeling, and it's no longer the comfortable feeling of being uncomfortable, right? And so now you have this feeling of like, no, being that is uncomfortable now, and now stretching is my comfort. And so when I start to shrink, I feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
When I'm not soaring, when I'm not using my magic, all of a sudden I'm not comfortable. And so when your magic starts to feel like, okay, I've done it, what now? Right? You need to keep stretching, but that stuff comes back up.
Yes. And there's the, you said this earlier too, like there's the, this is fun. And then there's also the, this makes me want to throw up. And I think it's an interesting balance of like that discomfort. But I think that just, there's a discomfort in growth, and there's also a discomfort in letting go of things. And in that letting go and letting ourselves sort of expand, there is this feeling of like, oh, I want to throw up because I have to step out of this place that has been surrounding me like a warm blanket. And so it's totally this thing of like, it doesn't always feel fun right at the start, because it feels like you have to let go of something to get there. I'm just trying to say, like, there is a fun element where if you think about it and it feels stressful and heavy, that's the thing you probably should step out of.
Right. I agree. And I feel like there's a letting go. And we can talk about this more another time, but the letting go is like twofold, right? There's a part of it that feels really freeing, and there is a part of it that feels like you're letting go of some safety, right? And so it feels amazing, and it also feels a little bit like throwing up, right? Like you're nervous and like that. And so we always joke about how like, okay, I think it's the right thing. A little bit feel like throwing up, and I'm a little bit excited about it, right? Like, because I know that means I'm stretching.
You know, I was so happy to have Rafan on. And what I also love is that as we break these things down, I think it would be fun to have another conversation with these people. And be able to kind of talk to them.
I was just going to say that to you, like, see what happened after and see what seeds were planted and what happened from the talk. I totally agree. I was like, wait, I want to now know what came from it.
Yes. Yeah. So it would be fun to kind of follow up with people and see like, okay, now you're your future self. So what's happening now?
Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. Cool.
Are you looking to level up your leadership skills, build more confidence, be able to guide and train your colleagues or team to be better leaders? Then I want you to look into my coach training program. This is a 6-week program starting on April 2nd, and it's invite only. So we'll get on a call and talk through whether or not this is a good fit for you. You'll leave with a certification to be able to coach inside of your organization. This is a way for you to strengthen your skills and maybe even potentially break out on your own to become a leadership trainer or a leadership coach in your own business. Set up a call now to reserve your spot for the Leadership Coach Training Program. You've been listening to Business for Humans. Don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode And please leave a review so that other business owners can find the show. Learn more at practica.consulting.